It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Podcast on the Brink. And for the first time since Mike Woodson's hiring in Bloomington, we're joined by Zach Osterman of the Indy Star to discuss what's been a pretty busy offseason for IU basketball. Zach, welcome back to Podcast on the Brink.
Thanks for having me, as always.
So, Zach, what's been your biggest takeaway from these first, six, 7 weeks now with Mike Woodson in Bloomington? What's your big picture takeaway so far of his tenure, and what are some of the things that have happened thus far that have kind of stood out to you in terms of interest and storyline?
Well, I think the biggest thing to me is the degree to which everything has just sort of felt like it's run pretty smoothly. And, you know, any coaching change is a system shock. There's no such thing as kind of a perfect coaching transition, particularly when you fire a coach, you know, maybe when you have kind of a retirement successor plan in place. But when you take the decision to fire a coach, I just don't think it is ever, it's ever going to be a perfectly smooth transition. And I think there were a lot of people, myself included, that even maybe, you know, dismissing some of the hysteria around, you know, oh, Indiana's just reaching back into its past and all that, were curious how smooth this would be when you were dealing with a first-time college head coach. You know, when Indiana was trying maybe some different things here with Thad Matta and maybe changing the structure within the program a little bit. By and large, everything has been run pretty smoothly. You know, Thad Matta was standing with Mike Woodson the day Woodson was formally announced. Within, I think, about a week, Kenya Hunter had been retained. Within another week after that, Dane Fife had been hired. Within about another week after that, Yasir Roseman had been hired. The staff was shuffled around and filled out really well. And then, you know, obviously I think the roster, not the absolute best case scenario, probably that involved getting Armand Franklin back as well, but I would say certainly a lot more good than bad in terms of roster news, who's decided to stay, the commitments Indiana has picked up, two transfers, and obviously Tamar Bates in late 2021 signing. There is a lot about what's happened so far that I think should encourage Indiana fans. And I think everybody understands that, you know, nobody wins games in April. But given how much of an eyebrow raiser around college basketball Indiana's decision was, not just to fire Archie Miller, but then to replace him with Mike Woodson, I actually think that this has gone probably about as well as could reasonably have been expected for Indiana to this point.
Were you surprised at all? You mentioned the eyebrow raising in terms of the decision to move on from Archie Miller, particularly at the national level. Were you surprised at all by how there was, I guess, I don't want to say pushback, but there was a lot of questioning the move just in general to move away from Archie? I don't know how much of that was certain reporters having a relationship with him or being tied to their opinion that 4 years ago it was a really good hire, which a lot of us had, but it seemed like it was a little bit over the top at times. And then for those of us who had watched this up close for 4 years, I thought it was pretty clear that there was kind of, it was kind of a line in the sand moment for Scott Dolson that he did need to move on. But were you, I guess, big picture, were you surprised at all at just kind of how it was portrayed a little bit nationally?
Well, I think that there's a couple things here. One is, and without wanting to turn this into some sort of, you know, study of society in COVID, I think there's a world where if COVID doesn't happen, Archie Miller still has a job. And what I mean by that is, number one, I suspect Indiana wins a couple more games last season with fans in the arena. And number two, I think that they're really just in society right now, and this has manifested itself in myriad different ways. I think that one of the things that has sort of changed, or at least, you know, let's say has been a side effect of what we as just a whole planet really have been through in the last 12 to 14 months is that people just weren't interested in accepting the status quo anymore if the status quo wasn't working. And if last season had happened under similar circumstances, but no COVID, similar meaning the results, maybe there's a world where everybody goes away for a summer. Archie Miller lands a couple transfers, things calm down and Indiana's ready to give him one more year. But it's a strange comparison, but like, I think that, for example, the exploding housing market and the exploding transfer portal kind of might reflect some of the same human qualities right now in terms of, people just feeling like that, you know, that a fresh start is really what's necessary. And when you couple that to just where Indiana was as a program, as a team, the results, I think it was justified, you know, Scott Dolson's decision. As much as anything else, I've said this many times, if you can raise $10.5 million, if your donor base is so motivated that it can produce that kind of money to make a change, then that sort of speaks for itself. As for Mike Woodson, and this is, again, maybe getting a little bit too big thoughtsy, deep thoughtsy, but I think we have this thing in college basketball right now where we've convinced ourselves that college basketball coaches, only college basketball coaches, can coach college basketball. And to be really clear, this is not me guaranteeing Mike Woodson will be a winner or a success or whatever. But concurrent to that, we have this world where anytime a coach leaves college for the NBA, we say he's never coming back, because the college coaching comes with so much headache and so many issues and so many things, recruiting and, you know, the 24/7 365 calendar that the NBA just doesn't have. And so coaches who can make that leap, they'll never want to come back. And why would they? And I get that point. I'm not sure that's wrong. But then I ask, why are we okay with that status quo? Kind of coming back to the question of status quo, like, why does that make sense? And when at the exact same time we're having that conversation, we're also having a conversation where we don't seem to be drawing any parallels that seem fairly obvious, at least to me, in saying that the game at the NBA level has massively outdistanced tactically the game at the college level. It wasn't that way 30 years ago. 30 years ago, probably if you polled basketball people, however you want to, you know, define that phrase, you probably would have gotten something a lot closer to a 50-50 split. You know, who are the best coaches in basketball right now between the NBA and college? You would have probably, you know, a few of them would have been in the NBA. Pat Riley. And obviously, if we're talking about 30 years ago, that's just the beginning of the rise of Phil Jackson and the Bulls. But you probably also would have gotten Bob Knight and Dean Smith and, you know, some others, maybe John Thompson, someone like that. My point is, it seems like we've kind of gotten to a place now where, absent maybe, you know, one or two college coaches, maybe Mike Krzyzewski, it seems like the consensus is that all the good coaches have gone off to the NBA. And I don't know that that's necessarily true, but, and I'm also not saying that means that college programs should just go hire NBA coaches. What I'm saying is, maybe we should stop and ask ourselves why, rather than saying, well, big college jobs can only be filled by big college coaches, no one else. Why? Because at the same time, we're having these two conversations. One, the college coaches can only do the college job. And two, that anytime a college coach has the opportunity to leave for the NBA, he's going to do it. And he's never going to come back. So maybe it's time to just reexamine the whole system a little bit. And I think that's a little bit of what Indiana's done here. And it may not work, but I don't think it's by accident that two of probably, I would say, what, probably the top 15 brands in college basketball, Michigan and Indiana, have both turned their programs over to successful NBA coaches in the last 3 years. And, you know, I'm not saying Mike Woodson's going to be a success, but I saw basically all the same talking points trotted out around Juwan Howard. And 2 years later, Michigan's doing fine. You know, 2 years later, Michigan's one bad performance away from making a Final Four in Howard's second season. And by the way, that's not with a team that was just completely and totally inherited from John Beilein. Yes, there are some pieces there, but Howard is the one that worked with Franz Wagner. Howard is the one that went out and recruited some of those transfers that made a huge impact. It was Howard's system that made that work, with a not dissimilar sort of infrastructure around him, with guys like Sadie Washington and Phil Martelli and so on. And so I've sort of turned this into a graduate thesis, forgive me. But I do think that, like, we kind of have to, maybe it is time to stop again talking about the status quo. Maybe it is time to stop thinking in these very sort of restricted ways that I think we have for a while in college basketball around who can and who can't do the job, and maybe start asking ourselves, do we need to evolve the way we think about the job, essentially? And I think if Mike Woodson is a success in Indiana, I think that has the capacity really to spark some of that evolution. Because as big of a deal as Michigan basketball is, if Indiana had that level of success, it would resonate more broadly across the sport, I suspect.
So is your argument, I won't say it's an argument, but
with the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you saying what Indiana has done differently than other schools who have hired former players or guys with NBA experience? The difference in what Indiana has done here is it the infrastructure that they're surrounding Woodson with? Is that to you the big distinguishing thing that is different from other situations?
I think that's definitely part of it. I think that's definitely a significant piece of it. The idea that the job, I think for a long time, and this, listen, I will admit up front that this is an oversimplification, but for a long time, it has felt like the job of a college basketball coach is essentially to hand them the keys to the building and say, here's your budget, here's the schedule, make it work. And I do agree that we have asked college basketball coaches to become too many different things. You know, we've asked them to be tactical innovators while also saying, but you better not miss a single minute of a single AAU game or a single high school practice if you want to you know, if you really want to show that you're a good recruiter and you're going to get this one kid, this kid right here, just this one, you better be at every one of his games and every one of his practices, and you better have your whole staff there. And we make a huge deal about who's following who on the recruiting trail. And I'm not saying we just need to, you know, wad all that up and throw it in the bin. But what I'm saying is maybe it is time to start saying, if the NBA is such a more attractive place, not just because of, you know, the lack of headaches or distractions or minor details, but also because that environment is clearly conducive to developing a more advanced system within your either your team, your program, your franchise, whatever term you want to use, then maybe we need to reexamine how we approach that question in college. And maybe we need to say, does a college coach need a little more help? Does it, you know, can we get to a place where a college coach still has the same autonomy as an NBA coach, you know, still has the same, you know, right to refusal of players, and still has the same sort of ability to make his own decisions on development, rotations, and all those different things, and you know, breaking down film, recruiting, all that. But like maybe we just take a little bit more off of his shoulders, and maybe that lets him do just a little bit more work on the court. I remember when Tracy Smith, I remember in the middle of the 2013, I think I've made this comparison before, maybe to you, maybe to someone else. In 2013, in the middle of that season, well before Indiana had made the NCAA tournament, gone on its run, gone to Omaha, Tracy Smith, then the IU baseball coach, was sitting down with me and I think Dustin Dupirak. And he just said, I've never had a team in my life where all I had to do was coach. The guys on the team, they're self-motivated. There's great leadership. I don't have to worry about anybody academically. They do their own. Like, I don't have to tell anybody to schedule out doing extra work, hitting in the cages or side sessions in the bullpen. They take care of everything. All the details are off my plate, and all I have to do is coach. And he said, that is why I think this team has a chance to be really special. And this was in like April, well before they'd made it to the College World Series. And I think that I think the goal should maybe be in college basketball in particular to get a little bit closer, to get back to that a little bit. Not to say that recruiting isn't still important, not to say that you're never going to have to do booster events or anything like that, but get a little bit more of that back for a head coach and see what happens, and see if, you know, maybe not requiring the head coach to miss 3 practices a week so we can go make recruiting visits doesn't wind up making the team a little bit better, that kind of thing. So, and again, I feel like I'm, you know, I think I referred to it once as Scott Dolson's Jerry Maguire moment. And I want to be clear. This is my interpretation of what he's doing. You know, Scott Dolson is not laid this out for me in a PowerPoint presentation or anything. It'd be nice if he did, I guess. But I recognize it sounding a little bit like my Jerry Maguire moment. I think that maybe if Mike Woodson is successful and Juwan Howard continues to be successful, maybe we need to start rethinking some of the way that we see, you know, coaching and the requirements of college basketball coaching and how to do it on a day-to-day basis in ways that might, you know, might tilt that balance back a little bit in favor of college and not make it such a pro-heavy sport as it is right now.
One thing I want to get your take on is Indiana's roster for next season, because there's been some obviously, comments made a couple weeks ago. I think it was Yzir Roseman said that they were still looking in the portal potentially for next season in an interview that he did. And I'm looking at just kind of the numbers right now. Indiana's got, I think it's 9 scholarship players returning and 4 arrivals. Xavier Johnson from Pitt, Logan Duncan, the freshman big man from Cincinnati, Tamar Bates, who has really made a rapid rise in the rankings since his commitment to Indiana, and also Miller Kopp from Northwestern. So there's 13 scholarships. All of them, at least right now on paper, are spoken for. We still kind of have this unknown with the portal. and the date of July 1st, there can still be movement. So it's still kind of an open season, I guess, in terms of player movement. But I'm curious kind of your big picture thoughts on this roster. Is it improved enough to make a significant leap in the Big Ten? What do you like about it, and what do you still have questions about?
I think it's certainly no worse than it was last year. And I don't think it's necessarily kind of a clean exchange of, you know, Xavier Johnson for Armon Franklin or anything like that. But, you know, when you consider you're going to get at least one more year of Trace Jackson Davis in a league where he's going to be one of the most senior big men around, you're going to get another year of development for, you know, some guys who've shown some real promise, like a Jordan Geronimo. You're getting proven production from Miller Kopp, from Xavier Johnson. Then you've got a really promising couple freshmen coming in, and Tamar Bates and Logan Duncombe. I certainly think it's at least no worse than it was last year. I think it's different, possibly, but certainly not worse. And I think that broadly speaking, I think we can all agree that, you know, Indiana probably should have made the tournament with its roster last year, and obviously didn't. I still think it's, you know, I don't know if it needs another, I don't know if it necessarily needs another body or not, but I do think, just broadly speaking, the question that is going to linger over this team until it can prove itself is can it, is it advanced enough, especially without its most prolific and efficient perimeter players, Al Durham and now Armon Franklin, is it advanced enough offensively to really take a step forward? And I think there's reasons to believe that maybe, yes, you're going to have a lot of creativity between Johnson, Fennessy, Christian Lander. You know, there's certainly reasons to believe that Indiana's going to be able to shoot the three at least as well as last season, even though you do lose Durham and Franklin. And you're still going to have that interior presence between Trace Jackson Davis and Race Thompson that I think teams are going to have to respect. So it's not like you can just play five out because you got nobody to put in the post and take up space and rebound. But, you know, you need to see it work, and you need to be sure that on a team where you kind of have 3-point guards and in theory, maybe only, you know, a couple shooters, maybe three shooters, you know, I mean, Jerome Hunter always has kind of flirted with being a significant presence beyond the arc, but you've got Miller Kopp, you've got Parker Stewart, potentially Tamar Bates, who at least in watching his film, I really like his stroke. You know, that there's a lot of pieces there, but when you are talking about a new staff, a new coach, a new system, yada, 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 I think we need to see it in action to know for sure. And I think that I don't think this roster has gotten worse. On the balance, it has changed, and you are going to be looking at very least the questions you're going to have at the most basic, or, you know, questions like, can Parker Stewart be a productive Big Ten player? We know he was a productive, you know, OVC player. We know he was on pace to be a productive ACC player. So you like your chances, but you need to see it happen. How does Xavier Johnson translate? How much better can Trace Jackson Davis get? You know, that kind of thing. I think that on the average, I don't think it's any worse. It could be a little bit better potentially. But mostly I think it's different. And now it's a question of just how quickly it can absorb what its coach is going to ask it to do.
So I'm looking at all these names, and none of them stick out to me as someone that couldn't potentially contribute in some way. I mean, Trace Jackson Davis, obviously, we know is going to be the centerpiece. But beyond that, you know, there's guys who have played major roles previously in this IU program. But with a new staff coming in and kind of a reset of the style of play and how things are going to work, it seems like most everything else is probably going to be up for grabs. Obviously, you know, a guy like Race Thompson is going to play a role. Rob Fennessy, with what Dane Fife's had to say about him, I think most people believe that he's going to have some type of role. Parker Stewart, great shooter at previous stops, is going to be able to come in potentially and help from a shooting perspective. Xavier Johnson, same thing. You don't bring in a guy from Pitt with those accolades if there's not some type of expectation of the role he's going to play in Miller Kopp. I mean, so there's a lot of names, but I'm not looking at any of them and saying this guy doesn't have a chance to contribute in some way, but I'm also realistic in the fact that you're not going to play 13 guys on a college basketball team. That's just not how it works. So, and I kind of asked Dane Fife this last week in our conversation, and he didn't necessarily give a straightforward answer because, you know, they're obviously trying to still figure things out, and a lot is to be determined in terms of a rotation and everything for next year. But, I mean, realistically, are we looking at a scenario where some of these guys are going to be looking at a significant kind of decrease in their role from what they saw last year?
I think it's possible. And I think that that's part of a system shock of a new head coach is not just, you know, the change in the immediate term, but how things roll on once you get through the season. Curtis Jones is a good example. I think Curtis Jones is a nice player. He wound up having a nice career. He played at Oklahoma State, played at Penn State. You know, he gave Indiana, he gave Archie Miller's system a real shot. He was one of the players that stayed that summer, that first summer in 2017, got a lot better, got a lot stronger, yada, yada, yada. Then got to the season and it just didn't work out. And he transferred mid-year. And that's not really, at least as far as I know, you know, there was nothing horribly untoward involved there. It was just two sides that, you know, tried to make it work. It didn't work. And that happens sometimes. There's nothing, again, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But I think there might be one or two right now that you look at on Indiana's roster and say, you know, you need to be ready for something different. I mean, even not even necessarily decrease playing time, but playing time in a different way. Race Thompson's a good example. I don't know if we're going to see nearly as much, you know, Race Thompson at the four, Trace Jackson Davis at the five as we saw last year. Now, listen, you know, if Archie Miller were here, he'd say, well, yeah, I didn't want to see as much of it as I had to either. I had to run those guys into the ground because I didn't have the post depth. But my point is, systematically, we might be in a world where we're seeing a little bit more, you know, a little bit more Race Thompson at the five, playing some small ball, that kind of thing. It's not just whose playing time decreases. It's also whose playing time changes as the season goes on. So when I say the system shock of a culture change, or excuse me, of a coaching change, it's not even just those initial weeks. It's really, you know, kind of the 12 months that roll on from it as some guys find out they have a role. Some guys find out they don't. Some guys find out they fit. Some guys find out they don't. And there is still change coming. We don't know what it is. We'll know it when it hits, but I'm confident that, you know, there will still be some sort of, you know, flux that we look back on as being part of this coaching change, because somebody somewhere down the line will realize, okay, you know, I gave it a shot, but this probably just isn't for me. It happens. It's normal. Obviously this is not a prediction of who it is specifically, because I don't think that person even maybe knows yet, but I think you're right that some people are going to have to be prepared for smaller roles, maybe changed roles. And obviously, you know, potentially to consider life away from Bloomington.
Absolutely. And look no further than really what's happened at Minnesota and Penn State as examples of kind of some of the player movement that's already happened as a result of coaching changes. Zach, I know you got to run. I appreciate your time this afternoon on Podcast on the Brink, and we'll catch up with you again soon. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.